COVID-19 and children. Yes, we all are scared, and things are going in a way that no one wanted to predict it. With the second wave more deadlier, more voluminous, we all are thinking, once again, what can we do? Today's topic is about few questions that are frequently asked by parents and some of my colleagues, fellow child specialists. This all should allay the anxiety that you probably have in your mind. So if you are a healthcare professional, a parent, or a caretaker, this one is definitely something that you should listen to. Hi everyone, I am Dr. Gaurav Nigam, your host at Dr. Dad Podcast and a child specialist based out of India. Let's get started. Children are really impressionable, and therefore your child is going to behave the way you are behaving. It's so true that how you're going to respond to the things that are happening outside, it is probably the exact same way your child is going to behave. So do not think that they don't understand, because they do. I've been seeing this like now as a routine these days. A nice big TV set, a cool room, a cozy environment in the house, and news running 24/7. Well, that's not going to solve a problem, and nor will it give you any peace of mind. I am not saying that don't stay up to date, but strongly recommend you to just keep yourself updated instead of binging on that news. This brings us to our first question that we have received. These are the few questions that I have received over the mail in the past few weeks, so we have tried to compile them and make them into simple answers. So the first question is the second wave really bad for children? Are there more cases, and is the severity really high? Though it seems like the number has increased in children in the second wave, but the latest data reveals that in the first wave, around 4.5% was noted in children compared to 5.8% in the second wave. Now, this difference is definitely not much. There are reasons for the same. It might be because the second wave is comprised with large number of people. The tests like RT-PCR, which was not really available in the first wave, are now so commonly available. So therefore, we are definitely getting more cases. But having that said, yes, the mutant versions are more infectious. And also, when few months back we saw a decline, we had let our guards down. Kids returned to playgrounds and other socializing activities, and exactly at that time the second wave also coincided. So for right now, though the data doesn't show much difference, taking 100% full precautions is our safest bet. Another question is there a difference in the symptoms, like what we saw in the first wave compared to the second wave? The answer is yes and no, both. In the first wave, due to lesser number of cases in total, we saw a lot of undiagnosed, asymptomatic and mildly infected cases which probably went completely unnoticed because of the lack of RT-PCR facilities at a lot of places. But in the current scenario, because of the awareness and availability of the tests, we're able to find out more number of cases. Having that said, in the practical scenario, children can present with any symptom. Of course, cough, fever, cold, blocked nose, sore throat remains the top of the list. But there are lots of cases with GI upset, gastrointestinal upset, complaining of loose stools and vomiting, generalized fatigue, tiredness, irritability, refusal to feed. These are among other symptoms that are mostly seen these days. So where are these children actually acquiring the infection from? Mainly, children are acquiring infections through airborne. Either a family member is infected, or maybe they go out to play and from there they are getting the infection. So that's the first way that, first medium where the children are getting infected from. Infection from the from fomites is pretty less still, and the data is yet to come, but yes, it is pretty less. Which brings us to our next question. If there is one person in the family who is positive, is there a need to do a test in a child? So even for second wave, the disease is still mild in children, and very, very few cases lead to severe disease. So this will be a little discretionary. If the adult who is positive is also a primary caregiver, then it's likely that the child will also be positive. In this case, it would be a good idea to wait for getting a test and get an online consult with a doctor who can then take a decision. But in my opinion, since most of the cases are either asymptomatic or mild and get fine on its own, there's really no need to get the test done. But yes, there is a need of online consultation, which can let you know exactly whether you need the test or not. In case someone wants to get the test done, do not get it done immediately after the adult gets the symptoms. The test should be done once the child gets the symptoms or after day 5 of when adult in the family had showed the symptoms. Also very important, a lot of people on finding out that they have become positive send their children to the grandparents. Please do not do this. There are high chances that your child might also be positive by then, and sending them to older people which have a lot of other comorbidities is not at all a good idea. Next question. A lot of people are showing the symptoms but are negative on the tests. Why so? The answer to this question I've told partly in the previous one. The timing of the test is very important. So let's say if a person is exposed to a patient who was positive, he will not start showing the RT-PCR positive from that moment. The ideal timing would be either to wait for any symptom to develop or at least wait for 5 to 6 days post exposure. Also the sampling. It's very subjective how and what quantity of sample is taken. There are no standardized units of sample being taken in a swab. Hence, the tests are sometimes negative. These are few reasons among others why a test can be negative. Next question. What is the CT value on an RT-PCR? Cycle threshold value. It's a simple way. It means after how many cycles of this test was the virus detected in the sample. So if the value is less, that means viral load is more. And if the value is high, that means the viral load is low. So does this mean lower CT value will have more severe infection? A very common question these days. As we are seeing the practice, in practice, there is no correlation between the two. There are lots of factors for the same. Most importantly, since there is no standardized sample taking guidelines in terms of quantity, thus it might really differ in actual basis. So it's a humble request. Do not get all panicky about the values. A child has come positive, or let's say a family cluster is positive. How should a child be managed? The first and the foremost thing I'd like to say here is that get an online consult with a doctor. It's important to categorize a child into asymptomatic, mild, moderate or severe. Severe disease is very, very less in children, less than 1%, so please do not panic. Most of the children gets fine on their own at home treatment, but a consultation will tell you what all to monitor and give you better confidence in managing the condition. Since mostly the cases are asymptomatic and mild, so a good way to start would be home isolation, taking up a consult with the child specialist, give a paracetamol crocin when fever is more than 100 degrees Fahrenheit. The dosage needs to be asked by your respective pediatricians on online consult or a teleconsult. Keep a good hydration and nutrition. What is important here is to monitor 5 things, which again your doctor will tell you. Fever, if it is persisting for more than 4 to 5 days, if the child is not feeding well, if the activity of the child has decreased considerably, the respiratory rate. So there are these cutoffs that are there, like if it is more than normal, you know, like for example, more than 60 breaths per minute in less than 2 months old child, more than 50 for 2 to 12 months old child, more than 40 for 1 to 5 years old child, and more than 30 for more than 5 years old child. And the fifth point is fall in oxygenation using pulse oximetry. And please, I strongly recommend to check for whole 1 minute. I've seen in the past, you know, people getting all panicky by keeping the pulse oximeter on the finger of a child and suddenly the value showing 85 and they're all panic, and then the value comes to 97 and they're like, oh, thank God. So it's better to wait a little, you know. So a 1 minute checking would be a good idea. Next question. The adult was prescribed this whole list of medicines, ivermectin, doxycycline, etc., etc. Shall I give the same list to the child? The answer is a big no. All these drugs are not useful in treating COVID-19. I would once again like to tell at this point that prevention is better than cure. And yes, we all have realized how important this age-old statement is. So it's a humble request to go for double masking, washing hands, sanitizing, and please do not go outside your house unless really necessary. The key here is the consultation by your doctor, who will then diagnose your child and give you the line of treatment. We'll let you know whether the child needs to be managed at home or hospital. Once again, do not panic. Children usually have mild disease. Stay safe and healthy. In case you encounter any of those 5 points, fever, child not feeding well, activity decreasing, respiratory is higher than the normal, and fall in oxygenation, do contact your doctor immediately. Stay safe and healthy. For a lot of more information on COVID-19 and pandemic, you can log on to www.drdad.in, that is drdad.in. At Dr. Dad, we make constant efforts to make the pregnancy and parenting experience better for you. I wish you that you stay safe and hope the world comes back to normal soon.